You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast with me, Phil Kitramalides, and Dr. Sid Lowe. Usually, the last few weeks, we've been doing the Monday podcast together, Sydney. We've been meeting up in the wonderful Podma Berlin, the magical car park, and recording the Monday pod. But today, you're in Seville, ahead of Chelsea against Porto there tomorrow night. So we're doing this remotely. I can still see you, thankfully, which is the main
thing. I can't see you, though. You're cowering behind the Zoom screen.
Yeah. I haven't got my camera turned on the Zoom, but you don't like to hide. I'm more of a voyeur. I like to hide and watch you, Sid, while you're podcasting. Anyway, this has taken a rather peculiar turn inside the first 40 seconds. So let's get straight to the football, because there is so much for us to talk about on the weekend, where it was the Clásico and where the gap at the top of the table was further shrunk by Real Madrid's beating Barcelona and Atletico dropping points. There are now just 2 points separating the top three. Atletico are top, point behind them are Real Madrid, point behind them are Barcelona. But there is more to La Liga than just Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico. And this is what else happened on match day 30. The Friday night game saw Huesca beat Elche by 3-1. Rafa Mir getting on the score sheet again for Huesca, who move off bottom, out of the relegation zone. They are on course for the great escape, fantastic, from Pacheta's side. Saturday saw Cadiz beat Getafe by 1-0. Getafe continue to struggle. They're still not able to pull away from the relegation zone. Athletic 0, Alaves 0, another relatively disappointing showing from Marcelino's Athletic Club. Alaves are it's very much still in the relegation zone. They're second bottom. Bottom of the table are Eibar, who are beaten at home 1-0 by Levante. It's looking really, really ropey now for Eibar, who are bottom and on a really, really negative run of form. I think it's 13 games without a win. Then Madrid beat Barcelona by 2-1 in a game which gave us loads of talking points. We're going to try and hit as many as possible in just a second. Sunday saw Osasuna end Villarreal's six-match winning streak in all competitions by beating them 2-1 at the Estadio de la Cerámica. Valencia came from 2-0 down to draw at home 2-2 with Real Sociedad. Granada came from 1-0 down to win 2-1 at Valladolid. And Real Betis and Atletico Madrid played out a fascinating and entertaining 1-1 draw at the Estadio Benito Villamarín, a really, really big game in the title race. It meant that Atletico went back to the top of the table after Real Madrid had briefly reached the summit thanks to that victory over Barca. Monday night sees Celta play Sevilla. If Sevilla win, they're only 6 points behind the top spot as well. They're very much going to be fourth. They could still have something to say in the title race as well. Anyway, to the Clásico, which saw 3 goals. The woodwork hit 4 times. We had a sending off. We had a possible penalty for Barcelona as well. It was action-packed. It was, Sid, one of the best Clásicos we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable, wasn't it? And we've always said that the Clásico is a rare big game because it almost always delivers. One of the things that's made, I think, the last handful of Clásicos disappointing is that they come in the context of Clásicos that are almost always really, really good. You know, we had the first Clásico without any goals for, I think, 32 Clásicos. When was that? Last season or the season at the back end of the season before. And this was a lot of fun. It wasn't maybe There were moments of technical brilliance, but it was maybe not so much a technically enjoyable Classico as an epic Classico. Obviously, that's enhanced by the fact that it was played out in an quite extraordinary storm. And genuinely, that footage of Leo Messi shivering and looking close to hypothermia when he changed his shirt, I think gives you a glimpse of that. So too does the post-match interview with Nacho, who at one point had to apologise because he couldn't quite get his words out because he said he was shivering too much. Courtois saying that he couldn't really feel his hands properly. But it was a really, really enjoyable, pretty wild kind of game, which ultimately could have gone anyway, which is the way you want it. A game I was looking at earlier, I think it was 24 shots between the two teams, or 25 shots between the two teams, and a lot of fun. And I suppose, and forgive me for saying this, Atletico Madrid fans, and forgive me for saying this, Barcelona fans, in terms of making the league title race as tight as possible, it's probably the perfect round of week of results at the weekend. To have had Atletico draw, so they go back top and just give a little bit of a gap between them, but to have all three of them within 2 points is I think going to be quite a lot of fun.
Obviously, I was watching the game with quite a lot of Real Madrid fans who were absolutely furious that the side weren't able to kill off Barcelona. They had plenty of chances, particularly in the first half, but then also in the second half as well. They had really good chances to get the third goal. It felt almost inevitable that Barcelona would equalise. They very, very, very nearly did with the penultimate kick of the game, Elias Moriba thrashing the crossbar, the ball then falling to Ter Stegen, who'd come up for the corner, only for his shot to be blocked. What did Madrid get right and Barcelona get wrong? Because in the first half, certainly, it felt like Real Madrid were extremely superior. And should we perhaps give Zidane quite a lot of credit? I'm going to suggest here, in the last three games, we've seen him employ three different formations in his team. So against Eibar, they went with three at the back. Then it changed things up against Liverpool, subsequently changed things up again against Barcelona. And certainly for the first half, much like against Liverpool, he got things really, really right.
Yeah, and I think the similarity is probably more with the Liverpool game than with the Eibar game, not least because, yes, of course, the level of opponent makes that the case. I think we discussed the other day whether we were sure that he was always going to play a four-man defence against Liverpool, or whether playing with a three-man defence, or five, depending on whether you want to call it three or five. A five-man defence in the previous game had been a kind of, if you like, a practice run, and whether that had actually been changed because of the fact that Varane had got coronavirus. I think you're right in the approach to this. I actually thought Barcelona started quite well in terms of their use of the ball. They were moving it around reasonably well. It looked like they were ready to try and maintain possession. But I think Zidane got it right in terms of finding the space behind the two wing backs, of which there was much too much, I think, from Barcelona's point of view. The driving runs from Fede Valverde and Vinicius, even though they're different types of runs, so Vinicius is released beyond, Fede is coming from deeper and going beyond, but the two of them, that kind of directness, I think was really, really beneficial for Real Madrid, certainly in the first half. I thought they managed that very well, as you rightly say. They got the two goals. Admittedly, they get the two goals with only their first two shots, and they're both brilliant goals. Well, I say they're both brilliant goals. Let me rephrase that. The first is a brilliant goal. The second is a really good run from Vinicius that creates the free kick, from which it's perhaps a little bit of a fluke. In fact, it's quite a lot of a fluke. But so they scored from their only two chances. But there was, I think, that feeling that they were going to cause Barcelona damage. And certainly, once they were a goal up, and even more so once they were 2-0 up, you felt this game is exactly where Real Madrid wanted to be, because they're now in a situation where, tactically at least, what they want out of this game is right now what Barcelona want out of this game too. Barcelona step up in possession, Barcelona put pressure on them. Okay, now we can go beyond them. Now, that didn't last for the whole of the second half, but it lasted probably, what, 10, 15 minutes into the second half. They had a couple more breakaways. They could have put it beyond them. And I think Zidane read that really quite well.
Broadly speaking, it was a 4-4-2 for Real Madrid against Barcelona, having played 4-3-3 against Liverpool and 3-5-2 against Eibar. The fourth man in midfield being Fede Valverde, who put in a lung-busting performance, as he often does. He was really important in the first Clásico as well at the Camp Nou. A lot of the Madridistas I was watching it with were saying, Fede has to start every game. You've got to find a way to get Fede Valverde into this team. What's your view on how he should be played?
My view on it is it's quite difficult to find that place for him. I think it's possibly a little bit easier when you have players injured, because he's not a natural addition to the forward line, and he's not actually a natural addition to the midfield in terms of the positions of the other players. And actually, I think you see...
He's Real Madrid's quickest player.
Exactly. And actually, I think what happens with that is you can see that a little bit in what happened on Saturday, which is if you play a midfield that's got Kroos, Modric and Casemiro in it, which I think you have to, because they're an absolutely brilliant midfield, the natural positions for those three is in a three, because Modric isn't a right-sided midfielder and Kroos isn't a left-sided midfielder, but neither of them are going to play right in the very middle, so it's normally close to Casemiro. So you play what would be a midfield three shape. So you have what the Spanish always refer to as interiores, which would be Kroos and Modric. And then, of course, you've got Casemiro at the base of it. If you add Fede Valverde in as an extra man, what sort of happens is instead of it being a 4-4-2, it's a 4-3-plus-1-2. So Fede Valverde kind of has the right wing on his own and the others almost play as if he wasn't there. You know, they maybe Modric nudges maybe a little bit closer to the centre to give a bit more room to Valverde. But those three play almost as if he wasn't there. So it's almost as if you were setting up a three-man midfield with wing-backs going past. But on the right, of course, you've got a full-back and a wing-back. And on the left, you've got only the wing-back, which is Mendy coming up from full-back. So it slightly breaks the structure a little bit. But I think it's right that he has to play and there has to be a place for him. And that's the natural place. I suppose the other way of doing it, to if kind of psychologically at least, is to structure it as a 4-3-3. And he's the front of the front. He's the right-hand side of the front three. But then coming from much, much deeper. What I mean by that is it creates a lack of symmetry in a formation, but that's not necessarily a problem. So long as his presence on the pitch doesn't, if you like, kind of mess with the natural positioning of that middle three, then I think it can work really well. I agree with you completely. You know, the speed, the dynamism, the kind of freshness he gives to the team, I think is really, really important for them. I think in particular, if you're wanting to run at teams from deeper, if you're wanting to run beyond teams on the counter-attack, he's really, really important. If you want to maintain possession and you want to slow the game down, then perhaps he doesn't fit it quite as well. Because, of course, that's the nature of his characteristics.
What did Barcelona get wrong, then, in this game?
I mean, look, in a funny sort of way, not masses, but the things they got wrong were so bad...
No?
Well, the things they got wrong were so badly wrong that it looks like masses. I think if you look at them and say, right, let's pinpoint the things they got wrong, there aren't a whole load of different things. I think what there are is the consequence of one basic thing, which is that they have wing-backs, Destin and Jordi Alba, and a team that plays very high. And then those wing-backs are certainly Alba, perhaps a bit more than Dest, but certainly Alba. You catch the space behind them far too easily. Far too easily. And it was very, very easy, I think, for Real Madrid to play beyond them. And of course, once Madrid had got the first goal, it felt even more like that was the case, because at that point, Barcelona having to chase a little bit further. It meant that there was only two of them up front, of course, because by playing like that and moving De Jong into midfield, you lose Griezmann out the forward line. To be honest with you, I don't necessarily think that was a terrible decision from the perspective of the start of the game. When that lineup was announced, that was the lineup I was expecting. And it's not a lineup that I would have said, I can't believe you're doing this. But I think you can't get caught that easily. And to be honest with you, the Jordi Alba's attempt to stop Fede Valverde. Now look, Fede Valverde, when he's up and running, is very difficult to stop. But Jordi Alba's attempt to stop him was pretty pitiful, to be honest.
It was. Let's highlight the two respective sides' records in big games this season. Real Madrid have beaten Barcelona twice. They've beaten Atletico Madrid. They've beaten Sevilla. They've beaten runaway Serie A leaders Inter Milan twice. They've also beaten Liverpool. They've lost to Levante, Cadiz, Alaves, Alcoyano and Shakhtar Donetsk. If you look at Barcelona in big games, well, they were beaten by Atletico Madrid. They were beaten twice by Real Madrid. They were beaten comprehensively by Paris Saint-Germain at home. They were beaten by Juventus on match day 6 at 3-0, when all they had to do was not lose 3-0 to finish top, and they ended up finishing 3-0. I think it's clear that Ronald Koeman has done some good things at Barcelona this season, but in those big games, in almost every single one of those big games, they've come up short.
Yeah, and that's where you quite rightly contrast that to Real Madrid. There is something about Real Madrid
The Super Cup as well. I didn't even mention the Spanish Super Cup.
Yeah, although that said, to be fair, Real Madrid lost in the Spanish Super Cup as well. But there is something about Real Madrid that in those big games they respond, and that says something about the quality of the team. It says something about the kind of the competitive mindset of the team, and of course that does, I think, in all fairness as well, pose questions about the competitive mindset in those games that maybe, in theory, it's harder to be up for. That's possibly part of the explanation for Real Madrid, that there's something kind of psychological there that they don't respond until they absolutely know they had to. And I think we said this in the build-up to the game. We said the bad news for Real Madrid is this is a game they really can't afford to lose. But the good news for Real Madrid is that this is a game that they really can't afford to lose. And because it does feel like those are ones that they respond to. From Barcelona's point of view, the fact that they haven't responded against the bigger teams, on one level, maybe it asks questions about character against games when it's more difficult, when they're not allowed to play, when perhaps it's a bit more physical, when perhaps they aren't given, you know, it's not getting it all their own way in terms of having possession all game. I think the other thing is it poses a very basic question, which is there a possibility that they're just not that good? Even though they appear to be very, very good when they're playing other sides, is there a possibility that somehow this is just not quite a good enough team? And you know, we were talked about this in the Sliding Doors podcast just before the weekend. We were saying, you know, could this Clasico be a Sliding Doors moment? Because could it be the one that has the impact on what Messi decides? Now, the reason I bring this up now isn't because it matters enormously whether or not Messi stays in terms of this specific conversation. Obviously, it matters for other conversations. Is because we know that a big part of Messi's thinking is this a team that can win things? Is this a team that can respond when it really matters in the biggest games? And as you say, the fact they haven't this year, that list that you've read out, does then maybe pose the question that Messi himself, I'm sure, will be thinking, which is, are we just not that good? You know, is that the answer to this? Is this not just about character and so on? Is it about something very, very basic, which is we are good enough for all those other games, and so just the application of that level week in, week out, great, or most weeks anyway, great, there you win. But then against the bigger teams, is there something missing? That said, obviously we should put this into context and say they went to Sevilla and beat them. They beat Sevilla in the second leg of the Copa del Rey. They were only beaten 1-0 by Atletico Madrid. They hit the bar in the final minute of this game, and they would probably think to themselves that in the second half, at least, they got it right. And by the way, to take it back to your original question, that was with moving back to a 4-3-3, so maybe you ask that question as well. But I think the feeling, even though it was very close, and even though it's always risky when you load everything on the result, the feeling is that Madrid come out of this really, really reinforced with a real sense of, OK, we can do this. And Barcelona, the complete opposite.
Not if you read the Catalan dailies today, because they're both going with the headlines that underline the fact that the squad still believe that they can win this title. And of course they can. They're only 2 points behind Atletico Madrid, who they have to play at the Camp Nou in a few weeks' time. But as we always say, this Spanglish word, the sensations are perhaps more positive around Real Madrid than around Barcelona at the moment. But there's still 8 games to go. There's still 24 points up for grabs. Sydney, what did we think about Ronald Koeman and his post-match antics with the brolly and the penalty?
Well, it's an automatic meme, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought, I mean, for what it's worth, I don't think it's a penalty. That said, and I say this very much, what do you call this in English? Muy a mi pesar. Very much in spite of myself, or I say this with a heavy heart.
With a heavy heart, yeah.
We have seen those kind of penalties given. Now, for what it's worth, I think we should never see those kind of penalties given, but we have. But no, and him walking off, I mean, I think he was essentially trying. So for those of our listeners who haven't seen it, he's interviewed post-game. He says it's a clear penalty. He says it makes all the difference because, of course, if we get that and we score, it's 2-2. He says, I don't know what we've got VAR for in Spain. Get rid of the VAR then. I must admit, I'm with him on that. Get rid of the VAR. And he says to the interviewer, do you think it's a penalty? Come on, it's a penalty, isn't it? And the interviewer says, well, I think I'm not here to ask that question. He says, oh, well, you know, if you don't want to stick your neck out. And the irony of it was, he used the Spanish phrase, if you don't want to get yourself wet, and it's absolutely pissing down with rain.
Yeah.
He says, if you don't want to get yourself wet, then don't. And he turns around and walks off, taking the umbrella with him, by the way, which I'm pretty sure isn't his umbrella.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's the TV company's umbrella that he's walked off with.
Yes, it was a meme-worthy moment, yeah.
So, sorry, I've explained what it is. I haven't said... I've explained what it is. I haven't said what I thought about it. I thought it was petty.
It was a little bit, and the fact that he does seem to talk about the referees quite a lot. I mean, maybe some Barcelona fans like that. They think that...
Oh, I'm sure some do, by the way. Oh, definitely.
And they want a manager to come out and call it out.
Definitely. There are lots of fans who feel that about their clubs, not just at Madrid or Barcelona, lots of clubs. Oh, it's about time someone stood up and defended us and stuff. I personally think that's a short-sighted approach. I personally don't think it's the right thing to do. I can understand why people feel that urge. And I can particularly, by the way, understand why Koeman does, or why any manager does in that situation. You know, the degree of pressure they're under, that they're immediately sitting there with a microphone in front of them when they know the consequences of this, not just for their team, but possibly for their employment. You know, I must admit, I'm often surprised that players and managers don't kind of hit out more often, to be perfectly honest with you.
For what it's worth, I also don't think it's a penalty, but I know a lot of people do think it's a penalty, but even if they do, it's not a VAR penalty, because I don't think that it's a clear and manifest obvious error. There's enough doubt there for the VAR not to have intervened, but there we go. That was the Clásico. It was thrilling to watch, I thought, and thoroughly enjoyed it, added to the fact that it was absolutely pissing with rain as well. I mean, a biblical storm. I've not seen rain like that in Madrid for a very, very long time, which certainly added to the drama as well. Hope you enjoyed watching it. Atletico Madrid played on Sunday evening, knowing that they weren't top of the table for the first time in a very, very long time. However, if they avoided defeat, they would go back to the top, and that's what happened. They got the 1-1 draw just about. This was also a very entertaining game, I thought. The last 20 minutes were really fascinating to watch. You felt that it was on the knife edge. You felt that Atleti were a bit like a boxer, sort of on the ropes, holding, sort of withstanding the punches, still standing, still going. They managed to get the point, even though they had players injured, even though Betis had chances as well. They managed to get that point. Do they come out of this, Sid, as they say in Spanish, reinforced, having gone top in the face of so much adversity, or are they feeling, oh God, this is slipping away from us?
I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that. And listening to Koke afterwards, he was talking, you know, we're mentally strong, we're going to reach the objective if we stay strong like this, that there's a bit of tiredness, but that's not the problem. The question is in the mind, and if we can be strong enough, we'll be okay. And on one level, at least, I can see that. I can see that, for example, for the first half an hour, at least, they played very well, but they then created chances in the last 10 minutes, having been under the cosh for a bit in the second half, and Oblak had to rescue them a couple of times. But I must admit, for quite a lot of the second half, I was thinking, this is falling apart now. I don't know how the players will mentally react to it. I thought that Jimenez's response at the end, where he just kind of sits on the turf on his own, tells you something. I think that, but then that could just tell you something, I suppose, about the tiredness of the game itself and the disappointment of the game itself, rather than something beyond that. But I think it's just 4 wins in 11 now in La Liga. I think they can't help but look at that and think that this is a problem, that it's slipping away from them. I think that we are seeing that their squad depth is not as significant as Madrid or Barcelona's, even though we've talked about them having a good squad. I still, you know, I think if you're ending up with Saúl and Correa as your forwards, then there is a problem, and then Vitolo comes on. I think that there is a lack of creative quality in there that Madrid and Barcelona have much, much more of. And so, I honestly don't know. I mean, Simeone said after the game, I love this period of the season. Well, yeah, I suppose that's probably true, and you didn't necessarily expect to be in this position, and so on. But I must admit, my feeling yesterday, which I know is a big exaggeration to say of a team that's currently top, was that their title challenge has gone already. Now, I know, of course, it hasn't gone, but the feeling was, I just don't see how they win the league now.
They only dropped 7 points in the first 19 league games this season. They've dropped 16 in their last 11. You feel like it's slipped away from them already?
Yeah, Yeah, because I just, when was the last time you watched them play a game and thought, wow, they won that comfortably? You just feel like, it's not to say that they can't now find a way through and win all of these eight games, but you just sort of feel like every single game they're going to be on edge. Whereas with Madrid and Barcelona, you look at the fixture list and think, oh, there's at least a handful of games there where they'll win that and it won't even be a problem. Now, I know it doesn't always work like that, and you've already mentioned the long list of games that Real Madrid have played where they lost to teams that they shouldn't have lost to, or dropped points to teams that they should have dropped, because as well as those defeats, there's a draw with Elche and a draw with Osasuna, for example. But I just watched Atletico and it felt like, yeah, it sort of felt like it had gone. Now, I don't know if that's partly the dynamics of this recent run, or whether there's a bit more to it. And there are some things that go against Real Madrid. For example, I mean, Zidane, we didn't talk about this, Zidane after the game, it's very, very clear on Saturday night to say that teams at the edge, right on the limits physically, you know, can't do it anymore. But I feel like Madrid have things that can find them through. I sort of feel like with Atletico that might not be the case. Now, this is a special game, perhaps, because they're without Lamar, they're without Suarez, they're without Llorente. They then have João Félix go off injured. They have Kieran Trippier go off injured. That's five starters gone. And the reaction at the end is pretty good. But, oh, and sorry, Dembélé's another one who was absent, who I think probably would have played in the scenario in which Suarez isn't there. But, yeah, I don't know, maybe it's just pessimism talking, but I look at Atletico Madrid and I feel like it's gone. Yeah, I really do feel like it's gone. I hope I'm wrong, but I do feel like it's gone.
Okay, they do have some winnable games coming up. They're at home to Eibar and Huesca the next couple of matches. If they win both of those, perhaps they'll be a bit more reinforced and a bit more confident. But as we said, the title race is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that would help.
It's brilliant, and we're very much looking forward to the title running. By the way, I have to tell you about our Patreon, patreon.com/TSFP, where we do loads and loads of Spanish football content daily. Paper reviews from producer Al. Sorry, executive producer Al. He's been promoted and he'd like us to make that abundantly clear to everyone. We also do a Q&A podcast every Tuesday. So if there's something that we haven't spoken about on the Monday pod, send us a question. We will talk about it on the Q&A pod. We do a bonus pod every Thursday as well. And there's a new series of TSFP Presents Sliding Doors, which is out. And we're three episodes into that. You get access to all our archives. Every bonus pod we've ever done is on patreon.com/TSFP. So come and join us from €5 a month. I think it's pretty good Spanish footballing audio content value. Sid, we need to quickly talk about the bottom of the table and Huesca and their potential for pulling off a miracle. We're in the relegation zone for 23 consecutive match days. Most of them, they were bottom of the table, but they beat Elche on Friday night, as we mentioned. A particularly sweet win for Pacheta, the manager who got Elche promoted last season and then was promptly sacked. He was brought in by Huesca a couple of months ago, and he's got them playing better, playing more effectively. I don't know if they're playing better, actually, because they played quite well under Mitchell, but they're playing more effectively. They're winning games, which before they weren't. They were playing well, but not winning. Now they're winning. Now they're out of the bottom three. And now it's possible for them to dream of avoiding relegation. By the way, Pacheta, he follows us on Twitter, Sydney. Did you know that?
I did know that.
The pod, but he follows us.
Listens to the pod. If he did, good work.
Good work, Pacheta. He's a big fan of the caveats, I'm sure. But yeah, Huesca, incredible. Although, for a large part of the season, we've been saying they're playing really well. They don't deserve the bottom of the table. They should be picking up more points than they've got. So perhaps, I guess, this is vindication for some of those performances.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit. I mean, I think the shift, obviously, is the greater focus on Rafa Mir now. And so that brings with it a slight change in the way that they play. A little bit more direct, a little bit more based on crosses. But they're still, yeah, they were a better, as you say, they were a better side then than their league position suggested. This feels like a more natural reflection of their league position, and possibly even a couple of places higher than this. And Pacheta, when he took over, there's that brilliant video, it's well worth going and finding it if you get the chance, of him saying, so I looked at the table, so Huesca are down then, are they? Right, okay, Huesca are down, right, forget it then. And then he says, get ready, wait for us. So, what is it? Que se preparen, que nos esperen. You know, basically, we're coming for you, and they have.
He also said, you only have to be out of the relegation zone at the end of the season, on the final day, that's when you have to be out of the relegation. Yeah, yeah. So that's when it really matters.
Yeah, you can be out of it or not out of it all the rest of the time. The question is, on the end of week 38, are you out of it?
That's when you've got to be out of it. And currently, they are. Eibar, bottom of the table. They're only 3 points from safety, I think. Or is it four points from safety? But the dynamic, as they say in Spanish, is not good for Eibar, nor is it for Alaves as well, and nor is it for Elche. Particularly, those are the bottom three. Valladolid and Huesca are just a point out of the bottom three. Getafe are involved in this relegation battle as well. They're just 4 points above the drop zone. Going to be very, very interesting to see who's going down. I said on La Liga TV last week, I think I was put on the spot, and I said Huesca, because I said they've been playing so well but not getting victories. I said Huesca, Elche and Eibar. That's who I think are going down. I've got to stick to it because, you know, it would be too advantageous. So, what's ventajista in English?
Opportunistic, I suppose.
Opportunistic, there you go. It'd be too opportunistic for me to say, no, Huesca are staying up, even though they've won two games. So I'm going with Huesca, Elche and Eibar. Who do you think's going down, Sid?
Well, as you say, Getafe could be dragged into it, not least because their next two games are Madrid and Barcelona. Atletico and Barcelona. Hang on, is it Madrid and Barcelona or Atletico and Barcelona? Mm. Anyway, it's two of the three.
Real Madrid.
And
Real
then
Madrid
Barcelona, which is week 33, moved in between weeks 31 and 32. Don't ask. Who is going down? Alaves.
Yeah. Eibar.
Elche and Eibar.
So the bottom three, the current bottom three. Okay, there you go. Really sticking your neck out, Sid. Well done.
Do you know what? I say that without looking at the bottom of the table, though. So, I mean, I admittedly, you've just said what it is, but I wasn't listening. I'm gonna claim that now. I wasn't looking at the table. Okay. I was just thinking.
Before we go, in the Segunda División, Espanyol are 2 points clear at the top, 10 points clear of third spot after beating Leganés 2-1 last night. Mallorca still second. They beat Lugo. Almeria are 8 points off the top two now after losing 2-1 to Zaragoza. Rayo beat Girona 2-1. They came from behind again, and they're now looking pretty comfortable to finish in the playoffs. I mean, sorry. That's producer Al who's written this. Rayo are never comfortable. They're never looking comfortable at all, ever. But in theory, in practice,
He's just trying to make you feel better. He's writing this because he thinks to himself, Kitro will read this.
Is comfortable, let alone their position in the table. Oviedo, meanwhile, drew 0-0 with Las Palmas.
There's a surprise.
They're only 5 points off the bottom four, Sid. You're getting sucked into it again.
I know. It's without really being awful, but just by being not very good all the time, if you see what I mean. Without like having games where you think, God, that was dreadful, but just never really having any that are all right.
This week we've got Liverpool against Real Madrid on Wednesday in the Champions League, Man United against Granada, and Villarreal against Dinamo Zagreb on Thursday in the Europa League as well. If you haven't already, give the clip of our latest TSFP Presents Sliding Doors episode that's out now here on the Monday pod feed a listen. We discussed El Clasico turning points, including what if Cristiano Ronaldo hadn't scored in the 2011 Copa del Rey final, and even an even deeper sliding door moment from that game that Sydney expanded on. So come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP for that content and much more. If not, we'll be here next week, as we always are, talking about Spanish football. Adios.
Cheerio.